Well, we are in a new series where we're looking at people in the Bible who had struggles just like we do today. And one of those struggles is how to finish well. How to finish well. How to finish well. Not just end your life, but finish well. And so today I want to point out another pitfall that I think could keep us from finishing well. And it's two words that I see bumped up together constantly in our culture now. Early retirement. Early retirement. Early retirement. Do you realize we're living in a culture now where more and more and more people think work is bad. Work is bad. And so the ultimate goal has become, how fast can I make a lot of money? And how soon can I stop doing anything I don't love or want to do? How fast can I make money so that I can stop doing anything hard, anything I don't love? Right now, if you go to Amazon, your search bar, and you type in retire early, you will get almost 50,000 titles that are focused on making as much money as possible so that you can stop working as soon as possible. Now, let me make something clear. Don't hear what I'm not saying. I am not saying it's wrong to retire early, to redeploy into a new and worthy and world-changing cause. That's actually a great day that we're living in. I've been here long enough to know that, a bunch of you are being offered by your company a buyout, and you're in your mid-50s, late-50s, early-60s, lots of life left, and you've also got wisdom and experience and gifts and skills, and you want to redeploy and do something new and worthy. That would be great. That is my plan also. I hope you realize I'm not like going to retire from leading this church so that I can do nothing. Oh, I'm redeploying you guys into the wider church of Jesus Christ. I hope to encourage pastors, church planters. I hope to keep teaching. I have all kinds of ideas of how I want to serve the Lord redeployed. Not a problem. The pitfall that I'm pointing out, you guys, is retiring early. And I see it. So that I can do nothing but walk the dog, travel the world, play with my grandkids, and lean into my amazing bucket list of everything I think I've got to experience before I die. That would be a tragedy. That would be a tragedy. Tragedy. And so we got a guy in the Bible. We've got a guy in the Bible that I think could keep us from stepping in this pitfall. Caleb. Go in your Bible with me to Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13, way towards the beginning of your Bible. Numbers chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan." Here's what's going on. God has delivered the Israelites from bondage and slavery in Egypt, used Moses to lead them out. God said he would give them a land, and now they've arrived there. Here's what you need to realize. He did not say, go spy out the land to see if we think we can even do it. It was to see how. What's the best approach? What's going on? Let's just get the lay of the land. But God said we can do it. God said he's giving it to us. Start again, verse 2. Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a chief among them. Skip to verse 25. At the end of 40 days, they returned from spying out the land, and they came to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the people of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him, "We came to the land to which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." However, not a great word. It means I'm moving in a radically different direction now. However, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. And besides, We saw the descendants of Anak there. That's giants, you guys. Giant. We saw some giants. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan. Two great words in verse 30. But Caleb. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and occupy it, for we are well able to overcome it. Then the men who had gone up with him said, we're not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are. So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report. Later in the message, we're going to come back to that. I'm going to unpack for you what a bad report is so that we're not guilty of giving one or believing one. They brought a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we've gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. Here's what I want you to realize. Once you buy into a bad report, you exaggerate. They did not see people being devoured. And every person they saw wasn't a giant. But all of a sudden now in the report, that's how it's being reported. Oh, the land devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from the Nephilim. And we seem to ourselves like grasshoppers, so we seem to them. Here's what a bad report does. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, oh, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us up into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? Here's what else a bad report does. It causes you to remember the past as much better than it was. News alert, you were slaves. It was really rough. Oh, it'd be better to go back to Egypt, verse 4. And they said to one another, let's choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the people of Israel. Only 2 out of 12 spies saw it differently. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes and said to all the congregation of the people of Israel, the land which we passed through to spy it out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, the word could be changed to since. Since the Lord delights, he told us, he's giving it to us. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us into the land and give it to us. Us, a land that flows with milk and honey. And they perceive rightly what's happening. You're not just discouraged and you're not just complaining against earthly leaders. You're rebelling against God. Look what he says. Only do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection is removed from them. And the Lord is, say it, with us. He'll bring us into the land and give it to us. Don't fear them. Oh, here's how well this speech went over. Verse 10. Then all the congregation said, stone them with stones. We don't want to hear it. You're not going with the flow. You're not saying what everybody else is saying. You're causing a problem. We know what we're going to do now. We saw what we saw. Stop it. We're going to kill you. It's going to kill you if it keeps being so upbeat about God and all that. But the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the people of it. Now God's going to speak. Here's how God sees this. It's not like, well, I'm sorry you're discouraged. Let me encourage you. Lord said to Moses, how long will this people, pretty strong word next, despise me? How long will they not believe in me in spite of all the signs that I've done among them? Have they seen God do anything amazing? Good grief. It was not that long ago that he just led them, parted the Red Sea, drowned an entire Egyptian army, wiped out Egypt before they left with just multiple plagues, killed all the firstborn, but not their firstborn. Not like they haven't seen God do something. in spite of all the signs I've done among them. Skip to verse 21, still God talking here. But truly, as I live and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, none of these men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not obeyed my voice shall see the land that I swore to give to the fathers. And none of those who despise me shall see it. But my servant Caleb. I love this next phrase. I want to live this next phrase. I want this to be said of me. But my servant Caleb, because he has a, say it, different spirit. He's got a different spirit. What is that spirit? He still trusts God. He sees God. He believes God. He hasn't forgotten what God said. He saw the same cities. He saw the same fortresses. He saw the same giants. But he hasn't lost sight of his God. He's got a different spirit and has followed me fully. I'll bring him into the land into which he goes, and his descendants shall possess it. Now, what's going to happen is God's going to say, great, head on out into the wilderness now. And you're going to wander for 40 years until every person who's 20 years old or older is dead. Because you didn't believe me. And your kids that you said were going to be killed in the land, they'll be the only ones that go into the land, as well as Joshua and Caleb. So go to Joshua 14, and we're picking it up 40 years later. They've now wandered. Moses has died. Joshua has been tasked to lead them into the land. Joshua 14, beginning in verse 6. Joshua is leading, and Caleb is still alive. He didn't die. But it's always worth noting, he still had to wander in the wilderness for 40 years with all the other people that didn't believe, even though he did. Verse 6, then the people of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said to him, you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, in Kadesh Barnea concerning you and me. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again, as it was in my heart. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. When you give a bad report that leaves God out of the picture and the promises of God out of the picture, it causes the hearts of people to melt. But my brothers who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. Yet I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot is trodden shall be an inheritance for you and your children forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, just as he said, these 45 years since the time the Lord spoke this word to Moses, while Israel walked in the wilderness. And now, behold, I am this day 85 years old. And I'm still as strong today as I was in the day that Moses sent me. My strength now is as my strength was then, for war and for going and coming. So now, give me this hill country. Look at me a minute. Let me help you appreciate what's going on. The land hasn't been taken yet. They're going to now go in and try to take it. And he's literally saying, give me the hardest assignment. That's what hill country was. That's why we struggled as much as we did. Whenever you're fighting in, you know, Afghanistan, very rocky hills, mountains, whew, they know it better than, the enemy knows it better than you do. They know how to navigate all that and to hide. It is very difficult fighting in the hill country. And he says, give me this hill country of which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day how the Anakim are, he's like, give me the Rocky Mountain section where the giants actually live. Wow. With great fortified cities, it may be that the Lord will be with me and I shall drive them out. But here's what he's counting on. Just as the Lord said. Then Joshua blessed him and gave him Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, to this day. Because he wholly followed the Lord. What I want to do today is I've put together for you a checklist. I want each one of us to work this checklist and to examine our lives and say, do I have what Caleb had? Because I want to finish well and I want to make a difference. So I've given you a checklist. Here's the first thing I want you to consider that I think could consider it, that could keep us from stepping into the pitfall, make as much money as I can fast, and as soon as possible, stop doing anything hard or inconvenient or risky. Number one, here's what you got to consider. How much of you does God have? How much of you does God have? Oh, what stands out about Caleb, you guys, is that God had all of Caleb, stay with me, and he had him all the way to the end. It wasn't like, oh, when he was young, he was all in for God, and that just began to fade. Nope, God had all of Caleb, and he had him all the way to the end. It's worth noting, all those verses I read you, not a whisper. Notice what was missing. Not a whisper about Caleb's giftedness, his abilities, his skills, his one thing. I hope you heard it over and over and over and over. He had a heart that was fully committed to God. I want to bring you some really good news. We live in a day that makes so much of gifted, 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 gifted. You can be less gifted. But if you are more committed to God and he has all of you, you will see him do more through you. You'll see him do more. God is looking for the heart. Remember last week, 2 Chronicles 16:9? It says he's looking for a heart that is fully his so that he could strongly support that one. Oh my goodness, less gifted, more committed, heart that's all in. And God says, that's what I'm looking for. I'm going to support you. I want to use you. I'll work through you. Ooh, how much of you does God have? Very different question than what are your skills? What are your abilities? What are your gifts? What makes you stand out from other people? Thank God for all of that because he did that. But here's the thing that I'm bringing to you today. Heart, how much of you does God have? And when I ask this question, don't check out on me, young people. Say, oh, here's a nice sermon for those nearing retirement. I hope they listen. When I ask you this question, I'm asking it to all of you, regardless of your age. Because here's what you need to realize. If God doesn't have all of you now, it is not likely you'll give it to him later in life. Because it only gets harder. The longer you live being in control of your own life, the less your flesh wants to give it up. And say, yeah, I think I'll trust God now. All in now. You will not. The time, regardless of your age, is now. Today, as you hear the sound of my voice, wherever you are, now. All. And so I want you to be honest and wrestle with this now, regardless of your age, because later in life, you won't just let go of your life. If you have settled into a me first, I am the captain of my own soul, and I call the shots in my life. Whew. That's a very hard path to get off of. Your flesh does not want to let go of that. So now is the time to give God your heart fully, completely, and without reserve. No reservation. In other words, I'm talking about, you guys, a posture of surrender. And if that word frightens you, let me help you. Surrender, you guys, is what leads this. All in surrender is what leads to the most fruitful, peaceful, joyful, purposeful life. Because holding on to your own life, scripting it, saying, I don't know what God would ask me to do, so I'm going to call the shots here, is what wears you out and is what is so exhausting and frustrating and is what limits your level of joy and peace that you'll ever have. On the other side of what you fear so much, you know, it's terrible. We're sinners. So you just think, oh, if I gave God my whole life, he'd make me miserable. Whatever it is I hate the most, he'd say, do that. And do it for the rest of your life. For my glory. Be miserable. But glorify me. We have a good God. Oh, trust you. Trust me. I'm talking to me here. I was sitting in my dorm at University of Tennessee in pre-med, planning to be a doctor, when God said, I want you in full-time ministry. Do you think that was a comforting thought to me? Oh! I am so type A. I am so in control. I'd never done anything that I hadn't decided to do that I thought I could do first before I did it. I was like, oh no, God, just move on to the next cubicle. I don't know what's going on here, but that ain't happening. Frightening. And it has led to, I would never have wanted to speak in front of people. I would never have wanted to be a pastor, ever. Nobody in my family was a circuit riding preacher. Nobody's been a missionary. Nobody. And out of the blue, he calls me. Whew, that was not easy. But it has led to purpose, joy, peace. And your story doesn't have to be full-time ministry. Please don't hear, oh, I guess if God ever called me, it'd be... No. I'm talking about you staying right where you are. Pharmaceutical sales, physician's assistant, carpenter, graphic designer, whatever it is. But you live all in with a heart that's for God and the things of God with eternity in view and saying, I want to live for the glory of God. Be the best whatever it is you are and be the sweet aroma of the knowledge of Christ and be ready at any point to cross that line of what you're comfortable with and say, if he says, now do this, you'd say, ooh, I never would have thought of that, but okay. How much of you does God have? Because here's what's going on. Missionary and author E. Stanley Jones said this, and I think it's absolutely spot on. If you don't surrender to Christ, you will surrender to chaos. You're like, what? No. I'm in the middle ground. There is no middle ground. You were created and designed to be not just in relationship with Christ, but to have him as Lord of your life, scripting, calling the shots, leading. So you'll either surrender to Christ or you surrender to chaos, because we have a heart that was created that wants to make much of someone and do something meaningful. So if you don't surrender to Christ, guess what? It throws you onto a path of trying to make it all about something else. You, your kids, family, achievement, work, pleasure, image, I don't know, but you'll make it about something else. And here's what will happen. A disordered love. In other words, you're loving the wrong thing too much, produces a disordered life. You'll just have chaos and confusion constantly. I don't understand. It's because you haven't surrendered to Christ, and so you have stepped onto a path of chaos because you're trying to make something that was never designed to be the main. Is marriage good? Yes. Are kids good? Yes. Is work good? Yes. Yeah. Give him whatever he wants. Quickly. But none of that was ever meant to be primary. Secondary. Everything else should be your second love, never first, never first. Or you will be on a path of confusion, chaos, wondering what is wrong, what is wrong, what is wrong? I can't get the peace. I can't get the joy. I just feel like I haven't settled in. Woo. That's what James was talking about in James 3:16 when he says, for where envy and self-seeking exist, right? I've decided what I'm going after, self. Where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing will be there. Some of you claim to be a Christian, but you're not completely surrendered to God. He knows it, and you know it. And every time someone like me touches on this, it makes you uneasy. 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 And here's why it won't work. Jesus already told us what's wrong with that approach, that I'm going to script it. I'll hold on. I'll decide. I'll give him a little bit. I'll listen every now and then. I'll listen, and if it matches what I thought, I'll do it. But if it doesn't, I won't. Ooh. Jesus already said in Matthew 16, if you try to hang on to your life, you'll lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. Some translations say, you will find it again. You realize he's not interested in taking your life from you. He's a good God. You give it to him, and he gives it back to you. You find it again, but you've got the right love. You've got the right priorities. You've got the right passion for the right reason. You find it again. You find it again. And you got joy. You got peace. You got purpose. And so Caleb, I hope you realize, puts on display what we're talking about right now. Earlier in the year, I pointed out to you and mark it up. Whenever God repeats himself, make a note. I hope you heard it. Six times in the Bible, it says what set Caleb apart that was a different spirit. He wholly followed the Lord. Holy. No reservation, no holding back. He wholly followed the Lord, his God. God had all of Caleb, stay with me, and he had him all the way to the end. He had him when he was 40 and he stood alone. He had him when he was 85 when he said, give me a hard assignment. I'm not ready to sit in a lawn chair yet and just watch what others do. And watch out. I have the same sinful flesh you do. I feel it bubbling up in me. If you're in your late 50s or early 60s and you're beginning to think or even say, well, this is my time now. I serve the Lord. Let other people. I serve the Lord. My time. Let me help you here. There is no time that is ever your time, because your life is never your own. 1 Corinthians 6:19 and 20, how long is that true? For your whole life. 1 Corinthians 6:19 and 20, if you're a Christian, is true your whole life when it says, for you are not your own. For you have been bought with a price. So glorify God. Glorify. There's never a point at which I say, all right, I take over now. I served God hard. I've done a lot. But this is my time. This is my time. This is my time. It's never your time. I don't care how old you are. It's never your time, because it's never your life. You're not your own. You're not. Now, you won't be miserable either. I don't want you to think, well, goodness, if it's never my time, I'll never have my fun. There is nothing more fulfilling, nothing more joyful, nothing more peaceful, nothing more cha-ching feeling purposeful than continuing to live your life as if you're not your own and saying, God, what next? God, what next? God, what are you saying? I want to get in on what you're doing, not what I want to do next. I want to get in on what you're doing. So rate yourself. Either do it now or take some time sooner rather than later this week to prayerfully and reflectively sit with the Lord and be honest. Are you living completely, fully, without reservation? I'm yours, God. I'm yours. I'm yours. How much of you does God have? Number two, second thing to consider, how much are you willing to stand alone? Stand alone. Oh, Caleb was willing to stand alone. If God said it, he believed it and was ready to act on it, even if nobody else stood with him. That's not easy. That is not easy to go against the flow. In Numbers 13, you can see how all of Israel is having a massive meltdown because 10 of the 12 spies, here's what happened, saw only the circumstances and had lost sight of who God is and what he's already said in the midst of those circumstances. Can that happen? Oh, yeah. And you never want to be seeing only your circumstances, only your circumstances, only your circumstances, ever. So I'm going to tell you something I've never said before. Be worth coming out. How do I see more than my circumstances? I was being sarcastic. You read God's word. This is what brings it back into view. This is what, I'm really good at seeing my circumstances. Emails tell me gobs about other people's circumstances. And it is overwhelming if I lose sight of who God is and what he has said in the midst of those circumstances. I don't read my Bible every day to learn something new. I read my Bible every day to have God come back into view and his promises and what he said to be fresh to me. Every day, every day, every day. The 10 spies, and here's what I think is interesting. The 10 spies did not, you know, sometimes we act like we do live in a day that, oh man, there's half-truths and lies and conspiracies and what am I supposed to believe? That's a problem. But do you realize you can be assessing the circumstances and you can be exactly spot on accurate as to what's going on, and it's still a bad report if it leaves God and his promises out of the picture. The 10 spies were fixated on the circumstance. They got it right. The cities are huge, fortified, people are strong, and there's giants in the land. All true. Not a word about God. Not a word about what he promised. I can't tell you how many times in counseling someone says to me, Brad, I'm just stating the facts, but I'm just stating the facts. Yes, you are. There's something missing in the midst of your story. God. You haven't mentioned God once. It's just raw facts. Just the facts. A bad report is whenever you focus on nothing but circumstantial facts and don't factor in who God is and what he said to you in the midst of that. It's a bad report. Your heart will melt. You won't want to go on. You'll say, I'm done. I'm out. Bad report is when you only see circumstances. So let me ask you, are you guilty of believing a bad report? You guilty of believing a bad report, or worse yet, are you guilty of spreading one, even if it's just that you preach it to yourself? Do you realize who talks to you the most? Do you know who talks to you the most? You. You. We are talking to ourselves constantly. And if your talk is simply circumstantial, and you rehearse it, you know, this happened and this happened and this, and if this happens, then that's probably going to happen. If you are in the habit of preaching a bad report to yourself, you'll lose heart. You'll melt. You'll run scared. You'll pull back. Bad report. Oh, you don't want to spread it? You don't want to preach it to yourself? You don't want to believe it? Because here's what will happen next. Numbers 14, 1 to 3. Then all the congregation, bad report, they bought into it, raised a loud cry, wept that night, and all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses, and the whole congregation said, oh, it would have been better if we go back to Egypt. Now watch how Caleb pushes back and won't go with the flow in verse 8. And that is not easy when everybody is saying the same thing and everybody is being moved to a certain thing we're all going to do now. It's not fun to be the one that says, whoa, wait a minute. But he does. Verse 8, if the Lord delights in us, he'll bring us into the land. He'll give it to us. And then he assesses rightly what's going on. More than push back against Aaron and Moses, like, don't rebel. Do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But the congregation said to stone them with stones. In other words, here's, I think, what was going on. Oh, don't be so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good. Don't be stupid. Did you see the cities? Did you see how strong? Did you see the... I've heard this a lot, and I've been a pastor a long time. Let me help you. I have not yet, because I don't hang out at monasteries with people with scratchy robes that are just saying, I have yet to run into a Christian who was so heavenly minded they were no earthly good. Do you know what our biggest problem is? So earthly minded that we're no good to us or anyone around us. Listen to me. You do want to live with your feet firmly planted on earth and your head punched up through right here, right now. Heavenly minded, aware of eternity, aware of God, aware of his promises, aware of what he's done and what he's yet to do. Heavenly minded, please, yes. Because it'll change what you do next right here on earth. Like, don't be so heavenly minded. Are you kidding me? Don't be so positive and upbeat. Kill him. Kill him. What about you? Are you willing to stand alone? Would you have stood with Caleb? Or would you have had a stone in your hand? Like, kill him. This is crazy. We're getting a new leader. We're going back to Egypt. Our kids are not going to die. We're going to fix this. We're going to take care of this. Rate yourself. And then number three, third consideration. How much are you willing to risk for God? And if you want to, just add in there, or be inconvenienced. Be inconvenienced. Risk. It's not what I would have thought. It's outside of my comfort zone. How much? Caleb, you guys, lived on the edge, ready and willing to risk for God. Whether he was 40 or whether he was 85. You gotta consider. This guy just wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. With the rebellious nation. He's 85. You would think he would say, I'm one of the two that spoke up and said we can do it. I believed God. But I'm old. We need the young people to take the land now. I do want a good seat to watch it happen. Because I believe God's going to do what he said he would do. But I'm going to watch it now. You don't expect me to be a part of this. I'm old. Not what he said. Not what he said. Joshua 14, he says, the Lord has kept me alive. I'm still as strong today as I was in that day. So now give me this hill country. Give me a heart assignment. Give me a heart. Now, I do believe, for what it's worth, that God has supernaturally allowed him to still be as strong as he was. I'm not. I'm only 62, and I say to my mom, oh, Mom. She's like, Bradley, I just sit in a chair and stare at a tree sometimes for 4 hours. She's 86. I'm like, go for it, Mom. I was just on vacation. I stared at a tree for, I know, at least an hour and a half. I'm so tired. Every now and then he gives people super. I read about George Mueller. You know the guy that ran all the orphanages? After he finished running the orphanages at 70, he traveled the world and spoke 3 million times, traveling by a ship from 70 to like 89. He did as much as he'd done earlier. It was supernatural. Yay, God. But in general, I go to bed sooner. I've had to reduce the number of conferences. I've had to cut. I am more tired. I am weaker. But I am still fully committed to God. That doesn't have to change. That should not change. And I'm still open to him nudging me to do something is not what I would have thought. Not my plan. Outside of my comfort zone. Caleb didn't ask for a lawn chair. He asked for a hard assignment, which makes me think of one of my favorite verses, Daniel 11:32. But the people who know their God, when you know your God, that he, notice their God, not, oh, there is a God. The people who know their God, he's mine. What will happen? We'll be strong and take action. We'll be strong and take action. The biggest problem today is not America. Christians in America have access to more resources and stuff than anywhere in the world. And yet sometimes we accomplish far less than other places in the world. Two reasons, I believe. We do not know God like some other Christians in other countries do. And we do not pray. We don't cry out to God and say, oh God, you're going to have to do it. The people who know their God will be strong and take action and take action and take action. So what about you today? Are you willing to risk for God? Are you willing to be inconvenienced? Or is your life all about playing it safe? Guarded, careful, comfortable. Guarded, careful, comfortable. And I want you to consider how these three characteristics that we see in Caleb should be alive and well in us all the way to the end. Fully committed, willing to stand alone, and ready to risk or be inconvenienced to get in on what God is doing. I want to close by giving you two illustrations, modern day. I'll never forget. I love praying for workers around the world. Love it, love it, love it, love it. Getting in and praying for them. And I'll never forget a newsletter that I received from a man from our church who was serving God in a hard part of the world. And it impacted me so much, you guys, for two reasons. What he said and how old he was when he said it. What he said, but how old he was when he said it. He and his wife, Liz, were one of the original couples that helped start Grace Fellowship Church. So I've known this guy, prayed for this guy, learned from this guy for almost 30 years now. He put in 20 years with the IRS, right here in Northern Kentucky. 20 years with the IRS. And then, quote, retired. And began to make plans. They had talked about it for years. We're going to go somewhere in the world. We're going to go a hard place in the world. We want to go in a hard place in the world and serve God. Retired with him and his wife making plans to serve God in a hard place of the world. And we were going to partner with them. But Liz went to a wedding in London, stepped off the curb, was hit by a car, and died. So what did this man do? Right? He could have said, what in the world? What kind of God allowed? Oh, did he have questions? You better believe. But he didn't get bitter. He didn't shut down and say, my plan was to go with a wife. I'm not going alone. 1 year later, this grieving husband went to that hard part in our world by himself, praying, working, serving, wanting to be used by God. And after almost 10 years there, wrote this newsletter in December 2017. Listen to what he says. I turned 66 years old in October. My first Social Security check was deposited in our bank in Kentucky. Now I could really retire. go home, relax, read more books, go fishing, watch UK basketball, travel, and many other things on my bucket list. I've put in my time, 20 years with the IRS, many years farming, leading small groups, teaching Sunday school from time to time, and now he's in a hard part of the country, you guys, where people disappear for sharing the gospel. And he knows some of them personally. Where now, 9 years, I've been living in a country where they kidnap workers who are never seen or heard from again. So what should I do? Well, to quote J.I. Packer, my contention is going to be that so far as our bodily health allows, we should aim to be found running the last lap of the race of our Christian life, as we would say, flat out. And then he closes by saying this, Jesus looks at the nations and then he turns and looks at us and says, there's still work to do. Let's run that last lap together with joy. And so then he stayed 8 more years and is only now, right now, transitioning and coming home to America at 74 years old. But here's what I don't want you to hear. You do not have to leave America and go to a hard part of the world to make a difference. You do need to be serving God in some way and have eyes to see what he's doing around us. Do you realize you do not have to leave our soil and go to some other part of the world to reach people who in their country almost no one's a Christian? God is bringing the nations to us. When I teach in other cities, they just assume we have no shoes, no teeth, and we're just still shooting at each other because it's Kentucky. And that's so not true, right? Northern Kentucky. You guys, every time I turn around, there's someone in the locker room at the gym from another country speaking a different language. They're in our neighborhood. They're in my gym. He's bringing the nations to us. The only question is, have you noticed? Do you take time to connect with them? Are you willing to be inconvenienced to build a friendship and make a difference with someone? My parents lived this out like Caleb their whole lives. It was only as you get older that you see more of what you should appreciate. I just thought everybody lived this way. My parents lived this from the moment they were saved, and they were saved as adults. My dad didn't grow up in church. They've just all in. Being used by God. But here's what I want you to hear. My dad was a nuclear engineer who never left American soil. Ever. But they served God in the church all during his working years. And guess what? As soon as he retired, he loves languages. Loves languages. So I grew up lifting weights with my dad in the garage with cassette tapes that said, boy, niño, girl, niña. Donde está el baño? Where's the bathroom? And I'm like, Dad, can we listen to some kicking music while we lift weights? Is this? We would go camping, and he'd be at the picnic table with a cassette tape learning Russian, and then Chinese, and then German, and then guess what he did? As soon as he retired, he got involved at his church in Texel, teaching English as a second language. Oh, but he didn't just teach them English. He would help them find their first car. He would become a friend to them. So many times these people, they were a big deal somewhere else, and now they're barely making it. They fled their country, and he would go to the spelling bee, go to the science fair for their child because they couldn't be there. I would go home to visit them. I mean, it was late 70s, and he'd be like, Brad, I want to take you to Mardine's. And I'm just like, oh, goodness. All the way across town, and when people from other countries sometimes have you over, they don't even start killing what they're going to cook till you get there. This is an all-day thing. They haven't even started cooking. So we get there and they begin. It's long. But he loves them so much. He just loves them. He wants me to meet them. This is how he... Right now, my dad died over a year ago. Sorry. But what I'm talking about is my mom keeps saying, oh, Bradley... Just last week, someone knocked at the door, and I opened the door, and he said, do you know me? And she said, no. And it was this Korean guy with his daughter. He lives in Dallas. He's got a great job. He wasn't even in Knoxville. He was near Knoxville. He drove and he said, I thought I remembered where your condo was and I wanted to say hi. I wanted to see Walt. She said, he's dead. He said, oh, you made such a difference in my life. You had my family over. When my parents would hike in Gatlinburg, they hiked with a Chinese couple. When they would have a picnic, they would go with a picnic with someone, just constantly, constantly serving and pouring into others. So I found this email last week from my mom. They were in their 70s when she wrote it. My dad was 76. Listen to this. I thank you and appreciate the lovely Mother's Day card. Meant a lot to me. We have plans to take our refugee family along with another refugee family that my friend works with for a picnic and fun day at the lake tomorrow. Dad and I are in the throes of painting the bedroom, but got a call yesterday from Mardine, one of Dad's former TESOL students, telling us that his 7-year-old son was in a talent show at his school last night. Now she's honest. Oh, how we wanted not to go. Right? They're in their 70s. They've been painting all day. Now, this is a family. This is so sweet. My dad told me one time, he's like, that little boy that I'm about to talk about, my dad would go to the science. You know what that kind of stuff is? All day long for them to have their little moment with the robot. But because his parents wouldn't go, my dad would go. My dad said one time he heard other little boys around this little boy say, who's the old white guy? And the little boy said, that's my grandfather. That's what he thought about Dad. Oh, how we wanted not to go. But Jesus brought to my mind, die daily to self and take up your cross and follow me. So we died to ourselves, got in the car, got in horrible traffic on I-75 and arrived 15 minutes late because his school is way on the other side of town. But then she closes this way. Serving the Lord is always such a blessing. And we were dead tired, but so glad we went. Now it gets even better. When Dad died a little over a year ago and I did his funeral, yes, I celebrated Dad, but I preached the gospel. That little 7-year-old was 18 and he came to my dad's funeral and his whole family came to my dad's funeral and they're from a Muslim country, a place that's really hard to get the gospel in. They all came. And over the last year now, that boy who's 18 now and his older sister who just graduated from University of Tennessee has a great job. They keep calling my mom. Mom says, oh, they keep calling saying, I want to go to church with you. I want to go to your Sunday school class. And when I was with mom last week, she said, oh, Bradley, she, talking about the girl, just asked me for a Bible of her own. So I got her a Bible. She said, I want to read the Bible for myself. That's what God can do, you guys. That's what God can do. But they've been in, they're not just walking the dog. They're not just watching their favorite TV shows. They're not just taking advantage of silver sneakers and swimming a little bit every morning. They're outside their comfort zone, still doing hard. My parents would take meals to sick old people. You're sick and old. You know, when I went for my dad's funeral, I was at the mailbox, this cluster of mailboxes at their condo, and this really rough looking guy that did look like he's dying said, oh, your dad, are you Walt's son? I said, yeah. He said, your dad came to the hospital and brought soup to me. You would have thought my dad had, they just kept serving people. This is not rocket science, you guys, but you got to get outside of your, it's just me, my schedule. Are you willing to be inconvenienced? It's inconvenient to get involved with other people sometimes. It'll take up some of your time, but oh, it's so worth it. We want to live this way all the way to the end, fully committed, willing to stand alone, and willing to risk or be inconvenienced, not to make something happen, but to get in on what God is doing all around us. Oh God, thank you for your word. Thank you for giving us examples in the Bible, and then thank you for giving us real examples still, many of them in our church family. Of people who are living like Caleb, fully committed, wholly following the Lord. Oh Lord, we want to be those men and women. We want to live that way. We don't want to step in the trap of how soon can I just play and do what I want to do. Help us. Use us for your glory, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.